Hello and welcome everyone. I'm Arthur Noble from Knight Capital and the co-author of the book Leaders of Growth. Today you are listening to the Leaders of Growth podcast. This is the first and only podcast dedicated to scaling a company across Series A to Z. We discuss with founders, operators and experts on how to manage this stage of growth successfully. In today's episode, we explore the go-to-market topic with our guest, Mark Roberge, the former Chief Revenue Officer of HubSpot.
Can you be sure to introduce yourself and share your background and how you relate to the topic?
I spent most of my career as an entrepreneur. I actually started my career as an engineer. That's where I studied undergrad. And then I actually started my career writing code for a few years with Accenture. And then early on at 23 was staffed in a startup. And that's where I really found my passion. So I spent about 20 years starting tech companies. The most notable and most recent one was HubSpot. There are four of us that met at MIT during business school and started the company out of there. And my job was sales. So I was the CRO for almost 10 years through the IPO. So scaled the team to almost 500 people and the company to 100 million in revenue, and wrote a book at the end of that process called The Sales Acceleration Formula, which we'll talk a little bit about today. I think the industry was a bit intrigued about this engineer that built the sales team in a very data-driven way. And I was fortunate to build one of the first sales teams in an inside-only MQL type model. And that particular context opened up a lot of innovations with doing much more data-driven sales leadership. And that's really what the book is about in terms of how you hire, train, coach, and feed reps in a much more data-driven way. And then after HubSpot, I was recruited into Harvard Business School to build and teach the first courses in sales in the MBA program. And as part of that, I stayed very active in practice, spent about a day a week with a different startup every quarter to help them build their go-to-market. And that led to the creation of a venture capital firm, the first venture capital firm that focuses on that, the first VC firm that's run and backed by sales and marketing leaders called Stage 2 Capital. We're backed by about 175 CROs and CMOs and COOs of mostly public software companies. So Snowflake, Asana, Salesforce, Dropbox, Oracle, LinkedIn, Zoom, Twilio, most of the big ones are our backers.
Yeah, that's really exciting, definitely. Can you maybe share a bit what your definition of scaling? Basically, you refer to the science of scaling on your website and maybe to bring some definition in here.
That was one of the main drivers for the venture capital firm is I mentioned those few years where I was just working with different startups every quarter, and about a third of them became unicorns and a third were duds and a third were somewhere in between. And it was the first time in my career where we're seeing massive amounts of data points and wanted to reflect on those to see if I could pattern recognize on what was causing the success versus the failure. And those reflections led back to how the firm addressed two questions: when to scale sales and how fast. And I just felt that many entrepreneurs were a bit confused or approached those questions with much more subjectivity than they justified, without data or rigor or science, and that a lot of boards were not approaching those questions very well either. Really just go faster. Just like not a lot, not that speed is important in the venture community, but there's got to be an optimal speed and an optimal time. And that's really what the work of science of scaling looks to address, is to bring a lot more science, data, and rigor to when to scale sales and how fast. And so it's boiled down to three sequential phases: product market fit, go-to-market fit, and growth and moat. And just the framework provides a really precise definition of what phase you're in and also the implication on the go-to-market design. So maybe I can provide a little bit of substance behind each phase. Product market fit's interesting. I mean, obviously that term's been around forever, for 15 years, and it's a good term. I would say most entrepreneurs would say I scale when I have product market fit. But I also feel that most entrepreneurs are confused as to what product market fit is. And I think that's part of what your book is looking to address as well. You get everything from I have product market fit when I have a million in revenue, which I think is really wrong. I think that's like market message fit, to pretty good definitions by like Sean Ellis at Growth Hacker, who says, when you survey your customers and 40% say they can't live without your product. I like that one. It's quantitative, 40%, and it's based on the actual product success with the customer. My only issue is I don't like surveys. I think surveys are riddled with false positive, you know, outcomes. And what I suggest in the work and work on with our companies is to identify leading, first off, understand that customer retention is the best indication, especially in the area that we work in software. Customer retention is the best indication of product market fit. But knowing that it takes a long time for customer retention to surface, sometimes a year after acquiring a couple of customers, dozens of customers. And so we have to seek out the leading indicator of customer retention. And so we can talk a little bit about how to look for those, but it's basically what can you see factually in the first 30 days of a customer's lifespan with your business that will strongly correlate with retention, right? And that's our definition of product market fit. In terms of go-to-market fit, once you've accomplished that, go-to-market fit is really just doing that profitably and at scale. And in the world of in software, we often talk about unit economics as opposed to GAAP accounting profitability, because unit economics allows us to isolate the costs in the business that are going to scale with sales. And so we talk about how to set up the leading indicators to unit economics to know and measure that. And once we have those two items in place, we have a dashboard that's continually measuring our lead indicators to retention, which symbolizes product market fit, and a dashboard that symbolizes our lead indicators to unit economics that is go-to-market fit. We are now ready to scale. And the problem when we move into the growth and moat phase that most organizations suffer from is they mass hire salespeople at the front of a fiscal year. They'll have four salespeople and then they'll raise a round and they'll hire 20 in 1 month. And there's just a lack of appreciation in the ecosystem, I think, on like why that fails. It's how hard it is to do that many interviews, onboard that many reps, manage that many reps, provide demand gen for that many reps. And when you think about it, it intuitively starts to make sense of why that fails almost all the time. And instead, we need to think about scale as a pace of hiring. So two reps every other month would be a good starting pace. And we do that for 6 to 8 months and we watch the early indicator dashboards. I call that our speedometer. So we watch the speedometer, and if the speedometer stays green, then let's increase the pace. Let's go to two reps a month and do that for 6 to 8 months. And if the speedometer stays green, let's go to four reps a month and then eight reps a month. And so now you have a much more rigorous data-driven framework on optimizing your pace, because most people decide their pace by the industry expectations, double, triple, double. That's what a lot of people talk about in the West Coast these days. Or they look at the pace based on what the competition is doing. But really, your pace needs to be determined by the capabilities that your business has developed. And that's really what the speedometer helps us understand.
I see quite some companies who are, let's say, in 2 to 5 million ARR, 1 to 3, 1 to 4 is maybe even better group of companies that don't have too many customers yet. The lead inflow is definitely, there is some predictability in there, but conversion rates also fluctuate quite a bit. It's not, they're already like 10 million plus with 10 plus salespeople in the team. How do you advise them on like increasing the team? Would you just go, let's say, with one, wait a few months and then gradually increase it? Or how would you approach increasing the team in such early stages?
At that stage of 2 to 5 million, what I recommend is having a 12-month operating plan, like a plan on that's going to establish the pace of the sales hiring, but to revisit it every quarter at that point, at that stage, because it's just rare that whatever you establish for the next 12 months is going to be the optimal pace. You're going to learn about the business over the next 3 months, and then you can either go faster or go slower. So I think starting, it depends on the business, but most of the businesses, I would start with two reps every other month. It's just what that's going to do is it's going to allow you to stand up a recruiting funnel, and you want to keep that recruiting motion going and going, maybe hire a recruiter or hire a recruiting firm, and just it's built into everybody's weekly cadence of doing interviews. But you can make, it's nice to have two reps start together. There's economies of scale on the training. And then I don't know if I've seen research on this, but I found that like reps going through the training together, there's some camaraderie and some cooperation and also even a little competition where they push each other. The downside to that, as opposed to doing one a month, is if you meet an A player, you may not have a start date for 60 days. So you got to be careful there. You don't want to lose them. So you may adjust the plan. You may just hire them and have them start on their own. But I would recommend doing it two every month to start, and then watch the leading indicators and revisit it. And if it's do it for like 6 months, and if it's going well, then increase it. And if it's not going well, you're going to know really early. Because most organizations, as Arthur, they determine whether it's going or not based on the quarterly P&L, like the revenue outcomes. And that's really the revenue outcomes of your quarter is what was happening in your business and sales funnel 9 months ago. You know what I mean? You're making decisions on old information, right? So that's how I determine it.
Yeah, I really agree with you. And I personally also really like to look at the metric called pipeline velocity, because you can already see like a few quarters back if the sales team is basically ramping up, rather than only looking indeed as a lagging indicator of, yeah.
I totally agree with you, Arthur. And I think what you're digging into is the specific dashboard components. So like I would totally put pipeline velocity as a lead indicator to unit economics. So what's in the dashboard for the lead indicator attention, that's usually like the decision around what is that lead indicator is not universal. It could be they set the product up. It could be they start using it. It could be that they see a certain like success, either a transaction or a courting or something that's in there. I know for HubSpots, it was if 75% of the customers used five or more features in the first 60 days. For Slack, it's if 75% of customers send 2,000 team messages in 30 days. It's because of communication mechanism. For Dropbox, it's if 75% of customers back up their files in 1 hour. So like they usually take the form of P percent of customers do E event and T time. So you've isolated it to three variables, P, E, and T. But hopefully those are some examples of what you come up with there. Yeah, I think where you're getting at too is like the lead indicator of unit economics. We often talk about, I'm sure a lot of your readers and potential listeners here, they've heard of like LTV to CAC greater than 3, a payback period less than 12 months. If you haven't, you can Google those things. They're very well documented arenas. But with that target, like you can't tell a salesperson like, hey, go out and get an LTV to CAC greater than 3. Like it just, they don't know how to do that. But what you can do as you're doing here, Arthur, is you can extract back that goal to how many meetings a week do we need to set? What is the conversion of a meeting into pipeline and pipeline into customer? What's the average sale amount? What's the average expansion amount of our customers? What's the sales cycle? Like we can extrapolate that LTV to CAC of 3 goal back to these activities. And as long as we're performing above that target, we will achieve the LTV to CAC greater than 3.
Yeah, I really like how you tie it back even to activity-based metrics, so that you can really, as a sales leader or as a founder, have such a good insight like early on, especially as you say, knowing that sales cycles are, for instance, 6 months, which just takes a long time for the unit economic to mature. Something to switch gears a bit, what I'm very interested in, you've written the book, The Sales Acceleration Formula, and therefore there you also describe building a predictable revenue machine. It almost sounds too good to be true for some founders, but now it's really something you've built. Maybe you can share a bit what this means for you, which components it exists of, and about the broader book.
The book talks about the creation of a sales machine. These days I call almost a go-to-market system. And the science of scaling framework talks about the order in which you build the components of the system. But if we just talk about what the system is, there's two inputs to the system, and that is your hiring of reps and the demand generation. That's what you feed into the machine. And the system sits on top of a sales playbook. That's what is going to guide the machine, right? And that's basically a predictable way by which you're going to teach your salespeople to work the leads that you give them or to the opportunities that they create, right? Now, the trick with that is you've got to build the sales playbook on top of the buyer journey. So a lot of people build sales playbooks from an inside out. We built this product. Here's what it does. Let's go talk the world about it. And that encourages show up and throw up behavior where the rep is doing most of the talking on sales calls And there's reams of data that shows that that's suboptimal versus when you start your sales playbook development with the buyer journey and how the buyer thinks about their problems and needs and purchasing a product and build a sales playbook that supports it. Then you're aligned with the research that shows that those reps that are best to understanding buyer needs and tailoring the product to it is optimal. Okay. So the system has two inputs, who you hire and the demand you create. It sits on top of a sales playbook that resides on top of the buyer journey. And what causes the sales machine to run is great coaching. So great management, and the primary job of management is not to do the job for the rep, not to build a forecast, which could be automatable today. It's to coach salespeople. And so that's really what the book is about, is how to use data to do all of that, to hire reps well, to feed them with demand, to hold them accountable to a sales playbook.
I really like that you align this customer journey with the sales process, because you get the whole organization in such a different focus on basically providing value to a customer, knowing where they are, which problems they face, and then helping them to solve their issue and thus, as a result, realize sales, and rather than the old-fashioned approach to sales.
Yeah, it wasn't always an opportunity. Like I said, I was really blessed that HubSpot was one of the first firms in 06 to, from the ground up, be able to build an inside sales first model. Up until then, we largely sold software through outside sales. And when you do that, the adoption of your CRM is extremely low. And when the adoption of your CRM is low, you don't have accurate data. So none of this is possible. Once you move inside, the adoption of the CRM is not hard. Maybe it's not perfect with notes and stuff, but like the inside rep is far more dependent on it. And you can really do some work on it to make it good for them and also good for you to grab the data. So all of a sudden, it creates so much predictable opportunity.
Awesome. Maybe like of the content you've created, is there, how can people find you online? What's the title of the book and other materials that you've created?
So this new work, The Science of Scaling, and just to be clear, this isn't something that like I just came up with like last month. It's been something I've been working on for a few years. It's taught at Harvard and MIT. And so when COVID hit and we were all in quarantine, I spent a week and wrote a 40-page ebook on it. So that's available on the Stage 2 Capital website for free download. And it's a working document, but I think it's been used across lots of companies as a guide for scale. And I will write that up as a book in the next 12 months or so. So you could go there and find that. And then I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. So you can always connect on me there.
Perfect. Really, thanks a lot for giving your insights today. I've been following you for a couple of years already and also read a book. And that's been a huge inspiration for me and helped me guide my thinking and go to market. Really great to have you today.
Thank you for listening. If you want to get access to the podcast transcripts or the Leaders of Growth book, go to leadersofgrowth.co. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast. I'm looking forward to seeing you next time.